This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and your host. Joining me to celebrate Aston Villa's 100% home record this season, Mr. Chris Budd, Mr. Phil Shaw, and the man that only renewed his Villa season ticket this season to watch Diego Carlos, Dan Rogers. Welcome.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Hello.
I'm very, very well. I can now see the pitch at Villa Park.
Hurrah!
No more restricted view. I've gone forwards in the upper hole, and it now feels like it's an immersive experience, and I'm watching some kind of 3D event. So progress on that.
There's
front.
A corner flag that you just never knew existed.
Yeah, there's a goal that I didn't know existed.
So you're looking down upon me in the lower holt, David. Is this?
Yes. I was speaking to Bud actually up there. We were trying to see if I can.
David was trying to align his sniper's rifle.
Scope you from there, but I think you're tucked in just a little bit.
Oh, I can see you.
Out of sight.
David can see me. He's already taking pap shots.
We'll let the whole 10 wars begin. Dan Rogers, a bit of a waste of time renewing that season ticket since Diego Carlos was the motivation. Well, your favourite centre back of all time?
Yes.
yes.
Since Tommy Elphick and the other
one.
Can
you get a refund once you've used it for one game?
It's a Carlos clause.
Isn't it classic Villa that we buy? I mean, everyone knew the second that he collapsed to the ground in a heap that his career was over.
I mean, we're joking.
I've got to hope that isn't the case now, so that's real bad.
But he got up, and you know, it's literally seconds to go, and he gets up, and then he goes down actually in pain, doesn't he?
It doesn't look very good.
Look very good at all.
No. But in classic Villa fashion, we encourage him to walk off the pitch rather than getting him a stretcher. So sure that improved things.
But we'll talk about that more in the show. Coming up, the usual Villa news, 3 points, media Muppets. This is kind of an obvious one this week for Phil to highlight before getting into this game that saw Villa victorious. As people's faces melted into their seats at a hot Villa Park, especially those guys in the lower Doug Ellis and upper Doug Ellis.
Lower North Stand looks horrendous all game.
I've just had the sun on them the whole game.
May they rest in peace.
May they rest in peace. There are now available season tickets if anybody's interested after those casualties.
They've got a bit singe marks on them, but.
Deary me. So the waiting list will be used again. This is what the waiting list is for.
There's actually a secondary waiting list now, and that's if you want to get water at Villa Park, you need to join.
You have to pre-order the week before.
What a club. What a fantastic forward-thinking
business.
I mean, I put it up on Facebook and Twitter earlier on that 10 years ago, when I started My Old Man Said, and you couldn't believe how football clubs were getting away with things. I remember going to the West Ham game. It was the first game of the season. This is under Lambert. And I think I was living in London at the time, and I got a ticket on the day. There was some West Ham still had some, like, their expensive bloody seats left because nobody's paying silly money. So I just thought, in the morning, I thought, right, let's do it. I'm only like 40 minutes away. So I sat there at like halfway line, just looking at the Villa end, and it was just in, it was a hot day, like same, very, very similar temperature, over 30s. And you could just the Villa away end was just in the scorching heat. And then news got out that they ran out of water and soft drinks literally before the game. And then the kiosk was closed at half time. And you just think, how can football clubs not plan for this? And so I contacted West Ham and I said, look, this is not good enough. And you should at the very least apologise to supporters and declare that this will never happen again. And to their credit, they did. But this is 10 years ago. And here you are, you know, the lemon meringue pie hits you in the face as a Villa fan because your own club's doing it to their own fans. Kiosks, I mean, if you don't know what we're referring to, there was kiosks closed. There's reports of Villa selling tap water.
A large number of people saying that.
Selling tap water to their fans, which I think is illegal if you're serving alcohol. I forgot what licensing law it is, but if you're serving alcohol, you have to make tap water available for free. As you know, as in most bars and restaurants,
and most stadiums around the country, where you can you can fill up your bottle for free.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Commonwealth Games, perfect example. You just take your refillable bottle, and by the way, you can actually take them into Villa Park. You can take—I don't know what you're going to refill it with.
Cost you a fivepence. The whole tend your urinals. People, people desperately unscrewing the plumbing.
But I mean, I took a bottle already filled in, and you take them obviously filled up, so you don't have to chance your hand at whatever version of H2O Villa serve you up
for a club wanting to maximise its commercial edge. It's
I mean,
there was
a picture of the Everton fans were complaining about their treatment, and it was pretty bad, the pictures. I don't know how many of them got out of there alive, but...
It was desperate. It really wasn't very nice.
All I can say is I went to the Commonwealth Games, similar heat, and it was a fantastic experience, because that's how you run such events with thousands of people in. It's not as if it's... This concept of sporting events has just appeared. Anyway, let's crack on, shall we? I think we should just go straight into the news. Shall we talk about the hosepipe bans or Villa news?
Well, considering a hosepipe ban means you might actually get some fucking water, I'd rather talk about that. But yeah, we'll talk about the Villa news.
Well, I was actually planning on bringing a hosepipe to the next Villa game.
Just keep it on you all game.
So I don't know what they're doing banning them, bastards. All right, let's get into the latest Villa news. As you will know by now, we have a nice away trip to Bolton in the second round of the League Cup.
We're Bolton, we're Army.
Which is will be broadcast on Sky if you're in the UK. I am absolutely sweating like a pig.
I know, it's so hot, isn't it, today?
I'm in a conservatory. It's literally like a greenhouse.
Well, I had a shower just before the show, and I haven't reclothed. Yeah. So
I should have done the show in the shower, to be honest.
At least it's not on video. It's all right.
Yeah, this is why we don't do this on video, because we're all in saunas, yes, sweating away naked. Bolton away. The last time we played Bolton away in the League Cup was that crazy 5-2 game, which I remember Juan Pablo Angel scored that audacious attempt from the sideline.
I went to that game.
Oh, I did as well.
I went to that game, yeah.
Yep.
But JJ Okocha scored 2 free kicks, didn't he?
Definitely scored that world.
The 5-2 game.
The 5-2, yeah. Yeah. Game 2-0. Yeah. How would you win the late bloody cup that year?
Classic Villa.
It was an opportunity, that one, for sure. There's been a few in recent decades. Yeah. We could have added,
probably 3 League Cups we could have won.
Yeah, we've had it where the draws opened up and all those big boys have disappeared. And
Bradford City.
Didn't happen.
We're not allowed to mention that.
Sorry.
Didn't happen. Leeds away has been confirmed for Sunday, 2nd of October. It was waiting for a time, and it's 4:30 on Sky. A couple of loans out happened within the same day, or within 24 hours. Keenan Davis has gone to Watford. It looks like it's a loan to Adios, doesn't it? Because he put out a message which basically said, thanks a lot, goodbye. So it must be a kind of a done deal type thing, yeah, not like, so. Well, we'll decide at the end of the season, because it's just a way of breaking up the payments, isn't it? Because if they get promoted, would they have him around?
Well, Forrest didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But that Forrest loan was a real temporary business. This looks like it's a done deal. Meanwhile, Kane Kessler, Hayden has gone to Huddersfield. Another one of our loanees, Philogene Bidace, scored against Blues. And I think Watford, Keenan Davis, Watford is playing Birmingham next. It's like Villa
Ascent.
It's like Terminator. It's like sending Terminators back into the Championship to take care of the Blues, because we can't play them, obviously, but probably won't play them for years now. So we have to do our little Terminator routine. And so far, so good this season. How many players can we loan out to the Championship? There must be some kind of limit. If we can loan out one to every club, that would be fantastic. Villa have announced, they don't do the front of shirt gambling company now. They always slip it in, don't they? A couple of weeks into the season, they'll do some deal with a betting partner who I'm not even going to mention.
No one's even heard of.
Nobody's heard.
Really,
I think
dubious.
It's European one, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Apart from that, the thing that's dominated the news this week is just the Gerrard Mings kerfuffle, which seemed to be over in a, it's like a storm in the teacup, over within a week. It was just that interview that Gerrard gave. If he didn't say what he said, I think it wouldn't have really blown up as badly, but hey-ho. Right, before we get on to the 3 points, it's time for Media Muppets. Right, Phil, what's swilling around in the Media Muppets trough this week?
Well, you alluded to it earlier, but it is the obvious one. It has to be Graham Souness this week. He started off, everybody will have seen, or most people have seen, his Daily Mail column. Hopefully not everybody reads it, but they'll have been made aware of it, where he had an unprovoked go at Tyrone Mings the night before the Everton game. He said, "I won't be joining the love-in for Mings." When he appeared a couple of times on Zoom for shows we were doing on Sky Sports during lockdown, "I thought, for a young man who's not achieved anything in the game, you've a hell of a lot to say." And then he goes, the man Gerrard stripped of the Aston Villa captaincy in a move which summed up in one sentence, "I don't fancy you." He then listed, this is the best, but he listed the captains he had as manager. He goes, "Ian Rush at Liverpool, Alan Shearer at Newcastle, Gary Flitcroft at Blackburn, proper men," before saying, "If Villa win games, Tyrone Mings becoming irrelevant, who no one even needs to talk about."
So this was basically, Mings is invited on to a TV show to talk.
Yes.
2 years ago.
How dare you be invited to come and talk and say something?
Kind of bizarre. I don't know if this is like they, because a lot of Daily Mail journalists, obviously on the payroll, retweeted this and said, "Oh, outstanding column by Graham Souness. Watch, you know, make sure you read this. His unique opinion, blah blah blah." It's just to create engagement, isn't it? It's almost like he's the fall guy. They pay him some money.
Yeah.
And some ghostwriter whips it up anyway.
Well, I mean, I wasn't even going to put him in there. I would have left there. But of course, he's excelled himself further on his Sky coverage after the bad-tempered Chelsea Spurs game. He looked to be thrilled, and he started talking about afterwards how it's becoming a man's game again, and how he loves men coming to blows with each other. And then the camera just pans to his co-pundit, Karen Carney, and she was just sort of like sitting there with like the awkward face on. And then the anchor of the show just had to turn around and go, "Well, it is a women's game as well now, Graham." So I think he's going to be in the news this week as well.
Especially after alluding to the suggestion that Mings wasn't a proper man, having listed all the proper men he'd had as captain. So,
Gary Flitcroft, that legendary England international.
I mean, Ian Rush, you know, great, great legendary torturer of Aston Villa. But, you know,
Alan Shearer as well.
Mings could probably wipe them all out in a fist fight. But now the men's game is back.
Oh, for the real men.
But this is the thing now. The TV companies don't mind, or TV or radio, whatever, don't mind people on their shows coming out with these sound bites because it creates engagement.
Oh, it's a gift, kind of, isn't it? Absolute
yeah, it's almost like a setup. So I don't know how much I believe that Souness is an arsehole, or if he's just been, you know, set up like TalkSport. They're like pantomime villains, so that
they play the character,
forward.
Don't they?
They push forward for the social media Twitter pantheon, really. And that's how it is. So, I mean, I don't get involved in any of that. It's like low-hanging fruit, really, isn't it? All right, time for 3 points. The first point, FIFA has moved the start date of the Qatar World Cup. What's this, for the third time?
I mean, it's actually happening.
Meaning the tournament will now begin. I think they moved a day, but originally it was going to be Senegal versus Netherlands. This is what I don't understand. Why? Why break with tradition? And because it's always the host nation that starts off, and I couldn't understand.
Are absolutely rubbish.
Well, it doesn't matter. They still have a right to play the first game. So why even, you know, when they, the big news flash, oh, they've brought it forward a day, blah, 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 and Qatar are going to play the first game. I just presume they were. And because that is the tradition of well, I mean, they've broken all the traditions, just collecting brown paper envelopes to have this tournament in the first place.
Yeah, I like the end of their statement. The decision followed an assessment of the competition implications as well as a thorough consultation process and an agreement with key stakeholders in the host country.
This is like people trying to justify their wages when, hang on a minute, the host nation normally kicks off the tournament, so why did you, segue away from that? It makes no, it's not, it's like no news, but it's like people patting themselves on the back for a decision that I presumed... Yeah, it just happens, doesn't it? Bizarre. Point number two, this is one that actually relates to Villa, because weren't Villa going to host the Rugby Sevens at the Commonwealth Games?
Yes.
We were. Thank God we didn't.
Mm. Yeah, so Coventry, I don't know why that broke down, because I remember in the time of Keith Wyness, they were going to leverage the Commonwealth Games to hopefully get Witton Station sorted out and the bridges painted, train bridges painted, and then suddenly it all went quiet and it went to Coventry instead. Who have suffered because of that, because their pitch really cut up badly and they've had to postpone the second home match due to it actually being unsafe and unplayable. I think the first three or four games could be under threat.
The pitch is absolutely destroyed. I mean, yeah.
It's been so dry. It's like,
yeah,
it's just like a sandbox. And of course, it's actually not their pitch. It's Wasps.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they contemplating legal action because they're actually a year into a 10-year rental agreement? Obviously, they're paying for this pitch. And
well, they can try to, but they can't afford to sue anyone, can they, Coventry?
No, apparently Wasps are equally financially strapped, so they didn't relay the pitch at the end of last season. It was a decision made, and they came out with a statement saying, well, no, there was a decision taken at the end of last season, and nobody, you know, questioned it then. Now they're questioning it.
They're basically saying Coventry knew full well, aren't they? So
Coventry should be used to playing an awful pitch. You don't remember what Highfield Road used to look like.
So Villa have dodged a bullet there. Point number three, the infamous spoon bender, Yuri Geller. And it's not my term, spoon bender.
That's his own, isn't he? He calls himself one. Self-identifying spoon bender.
He used to be big in the 80s. Was always in the press. When back in the simpler times when spoon benders could be national treasures. And he claimed England's victory against Scotland in the 1996 Euros. I thought it had something to do with Gascoigne, but apparently he made that happen. It's one of his claims to
fame. It was actually him that saved Gary McAllister's penalty.
Yeah, that's as well as being Michael Jackson's best friend.
Good company.
Yeah. So what's he done? He's bought some island.
Yes, it's called Lamb Island, and it's just off the coast of Scotland in the Firth of Forth. So, but now he's declared it a micronation, which he's trying to make it a country. So it's got its own flag, its own national anthem, and even a constitution. And now he wants a football team for it.
It's the Monaco of the UK. We know where I know where I'm moving to.
He bought Exeter City, didn't he?
Quite a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's going to migrate them. But, I mean, Exeter's not in a bad spot in the world.
It's a fucking long old drive, that, isn't it? Exeter to the Firth of Forth for home games.
He's kind of shoots himself in the foot when he says, the wind is very strong on my island, so we wouldn't be able to play there. It's hard to access. We would play somewhere in Edinburgh instead. Which kind of defeats the whole object. Why?
It's kind of like Qatar, really, when you think about it.
But much colder. It's at the other extreme of the weather spectrum.
There are parallels there, that is for sure.
Except you don't want to get caught spoon bending in Qatar.
Can't he?
No.
What? What?
No, that is
very harsh
forbidden.
Penalties for that.
Deary me. Right, before we go on, a big shout out to the My Old Man Said members for supporting the show. If you're a My Old Man Said member, you would have already listened to the show because we do put it out as an advance ad-free show on the members-only channel, where you also get extra shows as well, and a weekly one which relates to the main show, as well as being a member of Match Club, our 24/7 community of smart and humorous Villa fans. It's like having a best Villa friend on your on your mobile or whatever device you use. Thank you very much, the people who signed up this week: Sam Gooding, Mike Doty, Liam Tuberfield. And then also for the new annual members, if you sign up annually, you get 10%, which is just over a month free. Mark Bucknell and James Withers, massive thank you very much to them. You can either go on the My Old Man Said website and click on the members link, or just go straight there if you've already made up your mind, to patreon.com/moms. That's Patreon, PATREON, and then moms, MOMS. Thank you very much. Right, main section, Everton. Do you want a drinks break? Are you okay?
I've been sipping throughout, mate. I've been quaffing.
Okay. Yeah, I don't need the wig because I'm just sweating it straight out. It's great.
We're all in our saunas here. So, I mean, we should be taking a drinks break, which... Another excuse for a break in play. I mean, I think our drinks breaks have been inbuilt into Villa games, judging by last season anyway. But as we alluded to at the start of the show, a very warm day for Villa's return at Villa Park. Full house, but not only was the heat a factor, but also no trains on the day, so people had to...
Double jeopardy.
Double jeopardy. I mean, I bike there, so... made no real difference to me, so I don't know what the story was.
It was a bloody warm walk from Star City, I'll tell you that, with no shade.
But don't worry, there was free water waiting for you at Villa Park.
Oh yeah, of course there was.
Well, there should have been.
It was the moment in the second half when Emi Buendia was just washing his mouth out and just spitting it onto the pitch. I could have quite happily had him lay underneath him. At that moment.
What you would have paid for some of Emi Buendia's spit.
Yeah, I'm going to... I might bring a fishing rod to Villa Park in these extreme heat. So when the drinks break comes on, that's when I'm going to cast my rod and then pull up one of those water bottles. They need like Hook a Duck.
Well, they need like a t-shirt, firing gun, just firing drinks.
Big change was the re-emergence, the resurrection of Mings the Merciless. I kind of expected that.
Yeah.
If he was fully fit, then he would have to play, because he is exactly the cure to what we didn't show. I mean, Gerard talked about bodies on lines and getting the blocks in and saying that's all but part of the feature of a competitive Premier League team. And the first person you think about getting the body on the line with blocks is Mings. You know, people say, oh, he's got a mistake in him. But he kind of compensates for that by a lot of his last-minute blocks and kind of heroics.
He had a very good game.
And he did have a very good game. So he came in for Konsa, and then a bit of a reshuffle up front with Watkins coming in for Bailey. And it was kind of a fluid three, wasn't it, with Coutinho
playing as like an actual 10, wasn't he?
Yeah, and sometimes kind of a false nine with those two kind of going out wider.
Yeah, it was more like a 4-3-1-2 type of thing. It was a little bit more like a traditional midfield, and then let the front three play on their own.
You saw it when Buendia came on. You know, Coutinho and Buendia were getting very central, and yeah. I think that was kind of working. And that's, you know, Barcelona used to play with that three at the top, and I think River Plate when Juan Pablo Engel was there. Is it the three witches they had?
Yeah, Ortega and Saviola.
I think it's a good way of getting in Ings and Watkins, because both Ings and Watkins can actually... go out and play the channels and go wide. I mean, you wouldn't have normally thought that about Ings, but he's not a bad passer of the ball, Ings.
Works incredibly hard as well.
They both did, actually. I thought both front players throughout the game worked really hard. You could tell they were kind of running on empty by the end.
Yeah. So that was the main change. And you just felt a lot more solid than we did against Bournemouth, you know, if Everton were going to be physical.
Which, to be honest, they weren't really.
Let's not mess around here. Everton, I don't know what they were doing.
So passive, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kamara's getting a lot of hype on social media, and he had a good game, and he's good to watch.
But he wasn't tested.
I could have played in his position and sprayed it around the park. Nobody pressed him. He had acres of room, unlimitless time. It was like, what are you doing? It's like, the way to get at us is to put us under pressure, and because we're going to... by hook or crook, play out the back, and we haven't been, you know,
And they were just letting us, weren't they?
Very good. And it's like, well, you're just letting the guy that we've brought in to try to solve this issue have all day to look really good. So I wouldn't be judging Kamara. You know how the hype machine works on social media is people look for likes and retweets.
Yeah, it actually reminded me a bit of, with Lampard and the other dugout, it just reminded me a bit of the playoff final. It was like, if Lampard had started with the team he ended with, he might have caused Villa a bit more problems, because just like that playoff final, when they brought another player on up front, Derby caused Villa problems that day in the last 10 minutes.
And they just bypassed the midfield, didn't they?
I thought that because our defending a set plays all afternoon was scary.
Awful.
And if they'd have had a big man or anyone who could finish, I think it would have been a much different game. I mean, you know, we were far improved from the Bournemouth game, don't get me wrong. But
we were literally playing a team without a real striker, weren't we?
Everton were dreadful, absolutely dreadful.
I mean, we'd get the ball sort of rolled out from the back and they'd just retreat to the halfway line. And then we'd have the ball in sort of the middle third. They'd retreat to their 18-yard line with basically a flat five and a four.
I couldn't understand, you know.
They were playing for
Lampard,
a draw, aren't they, basically?
Yeah, 100%. And I think I alluded to that in something for the weekend. That was probably, they'll try to get the defence is the first thing they're going to work on, because they haven't actually got any forwards to build a team
Which
around.
Which on paper, I mean, their back line, I actually thought, you know, Tarkowski, Cody and Holgate on paper, you thought, it's not bad.
But it needs bedding in, of course.
Yeah, and probably needs a bit of... But I actually thought they were there to be got at a little bit more on the few occasions we did sort of actually play through the press and have that little bit of pace and dynamism to play through them. You thought, right, we can hurt them here.
Gerard actually said that, didn't he, post-match? He said this was all about, you know, getting at that back three of Everton's.
Because once we did, you saw it, you know, we did open them up. It's just when we were, there was a little bit too much playing in front of them, which I know is difficult when you've got you know, nine men behind the ball, and especially in the heat.
I don't think that had anything to do with the heat either. We've seen that plenty of time. Yeah. I mean, I was watching, is it the heat? And I was thinking, no, actually, that is not an excuse. It was pretty pedestrian at the, for a big chunk of the game, actually.
Yeah,
but you know, going back to Kamara, there was a great little ball early doors. Actually, one of the first things he did, where ran into the acres of space that he had, and I think he got to the halfway line, and then he kind of bent one round, bent into the path of Ramsey, who ran on. And I thought, well, yeah, he looks great, but again, you know, he had all the time in the world every time. So I'm looking forward to him, especially when we played like teams like Manchester City and stuff, because you only have to look to that first half against United when their midfield kind of rampaged through us. And that was a different story.
What I did like of his, and we'd sort of mentioned it quite early on when I'd sort of gone through the scout reports, was that he isn't like a blood and thunder number six where he's going to dive in, but he just knows where to be. He reads the game and he nicks the ball. It allows McGinn to kind of be the more dynamic one, and Kamara's just there to be really steady, which we haven't had that player for a long time.
Well, Louise would like...
He'd try to.
But it was more, he's just casual.
Louise stands there and nicks the ball.
Kamara's a bit more what you'd say cool and chilled, and goes about his business in that manner.
A bit of Gaelic flair.
Yeah, but he also knows when to clear it, because there was a moment towards the end of the first half whenever I think Mings missed a header and it dropped in the Villa box, and Kamara was just straight in to hoof it away. So that's the old centre-back in him as well.
And that's one thing I'd say about Mings, actually. There were so many times last year where the fans, especially in that sort of corner flag left-back position where Mings would have the ball and think, what's he going to do? Is he going to overplay? Every time he sort of got put a little bit under pressure, it just went straight into Rose Ed on Saturday. There wasn't any fucking
about
it.
It was
very, very like low-risk football, which I thought, actually, that's probably not a bad way to go, especially when you look to Everton's something resembling a forward line. I think if they were going to throw the ball or cross the ball into the box, generally you'd actually fancy our guys in the air, albeit our set piece.
There was a couple of times when we were under the cosh in the second half, and he was down in the corner towards the Everton fans, and he opted to roll it out rather than, I mean, traditionally he would have hoiked it up the pitch, wouldn't he? And he would have just come straight back.
Yeah.
So he's clearly been told not to do that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You saw her when Villa are playing out the back. You'll see Kamara drops in between the two centre-backs and be that almost like a third centre-back playing it out. Suddenly, it just feels a bit safer, and ultimately, I want to see that against Manchester City, Liverpool, teams that are going to...
they're going to stand on your 18-yard line,
aren't they? Strangle us in our own half, so it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But certainly, it's progress, and it looks like it might solve that, the idea of us being a little bit clumsy when we've been playing out the back. I mean, you know, if you have to pick one of the new signings to be injured and potentially out for a while, I would rather, I think Kamara has more of an effect on how this Villa team can potentially improve. But he's probably going next game.
spin the wheel of injuries. Yeah.
It's a bit of injury roulette.
Great goal, the first goal. I mean, Ings.
Brilliant finish.
You weren't expecting that. It kind of reminded you of who Ings was. That was the kind of goal that there was that season where he got over 20 for Southampton, where, you know, just as a casual match of the day watcher, you were like, Jesus Christ, great goal.
It's a great goal from back to front. You know, McGinn does really well in the transition. It's a really early ball out to Watkins. It's probably one of the few times in the first half we actually got Watkins in open space, isolated against the defender. When the ball comes in, you think the chance might have gone. Obviously, it kind of bounces off Ings, and then suddenly he sort of swivels on it and just whips it in the corner. It's a fantastic finish. Especially from sort of where we are in the upper halt, you're right behind it. You think, that's it. As soon as he's hit it, that's in.
Yeah, it's almost like if he had a good, like, controlled first touch, opportunity wouldn't have fashioned itself. No, it was almost because of that first touch that suddenly the way he recovered it created the opportunity.
Yeah.
Because it wrong-footed the defence, and great finish.
But these are the kind of things we didn't see towards the back end of last season where, I mean, it's only one game, but getting Ings in and around the penalty area and give him a sniff, and that was always my impression of Ings before he joined Villa. You know, I actually think he's more versatile than that, having watched him play for us for a few months. Mm-hmm. So it's good news. And as Chris said, it was one of those ones that as soon as he got a sight to goal and he unleashed it, it was staying hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We glossed over the fact that Everton did score before that, which was disallowed for offside. Like the linesman pulled his flag up a good, 10 seconds later.
Just as he ran towards him, he thought, I'll just raise the flag now.
Yeah. I think offside. It's almost like he did it as a wind-up, didn't he?
But that was a little bit of a, having conceded two off a set piece at Bournemouth, and you think you've just gone, at the time you think you've gone a goal down again. It's not a good look, that one. They need to kind of nip that one in the bud early.
If only we had a set piece coach.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah, it's funny that with a set piece coach who's been there over a year now.
But when the ball went in, your instincts are...
It's another scrappy one. It's not like a well-worked corner. They've basically hit an area and just not won the first.
You were thinking, what are they doing?
It was the amount of balls that went from across the whole game, not just that one, that didn't come in any particular great height, but seemed to go through the entire field. You know, must have gone through 10, 15 bodies. Yeah. Villa and Everton, obviously. And it was just, you thought, there's no one going to take control of this. We're just going to have this pandemonium. But as you say, I don't understand. What is our plan to rectify this glaring set-piece issue?
Other opposition teams just seem to be crowding areas. And especially, for Villa not to concede in the end, I know it was probably as much down to luck as design, but Tarkowski and Cody and the other team are two that you don't want really attacking you. The height of them, and both are known to score a reasonable amount of goals. Well, maybe Cody just against us last season, but they're both good at getting their head in the ball. So I think Everton were just smashing it into those areas, and the fact that Everton didn't get in the end of the minute is just the speed the ball was being put in.
But the second half, thank God that Buendia came on, because that, for me...
The game was drifting at that point.
It turned on its head, didn't it?
Drifting, and he was a revelation. And suddenly, you know, you were watching that game with renewed new eyes, because that three up front that we just mentioned, Buendia was getting in the central position. You know, he was his running was intelligent. When he didn't get the ball, when he was running out on the right hand side, he was dragging their defense across and creating more space inside. And that was the problem. We were playing in front of them, but just with no real intent. But when he came on, he was creating space with his runs. And then, you know, his quickness of mind, that little flick over, which didn't come off, but it was just like, that's the player I want. That's the one I want him imposing his imagination on the game.
It's not the obvious. It's not the obvious things that come to life, is it? This was my observation in the searing heat, anyways. That it makes players like Luka Dean look more dynamic. You know, that they've got a player, a foil, and they've got a player to play off. And I thought there was some real nice interplay with Ramsey, who's got that great pace and that and a nice first touch as well. And as you say, it lifted the game at a point where you thought, oh God, how have Everton got a foothold back into this game? And, you know, I think they had a couple of opportunities where I think Martinez had saved from Gray. Buendia has this not just movement across that final third of the pitch, but he can carry the ball at pace as well. And that's really dangerous.
And it was great to see someone, we've spoke about it numerous times last season, but who's the guy who's going to take the ball by the horns and take responsibility? And it was him. So it's meant to be Coutinho. Ramsey did it a little bit in the first half, but actually he was just like, give me the fucking ball, I'm going to do it today. I'm
when
the man.
When Coutinho gets the ball, it's almost like the players just watch to say, all right, what's he going to do? You know, and they wait for him to do something. When Buendia gets the ball, he's so quick to get people. He gets you involved straight away, and he's like, right. And there's a couple of times where they weren't on his wavelength, and he did things which were, you know, the pass was, again, as we always say, passes that we don't see as possible, and probably the players don't as well. But he gets other players involved straight away, rather than the players just like watching and waiting for Coutinho to actually do something. It's almost like he, and I just think he's a uniting force.
Well, he commits the opposition, doesn't he? They have to prep, they have to engage him. So he brings one of their players to the ball straight away. Coutinho generally receives it and then rolls it off to someone else, unless he's given time, and then he's going to hurt you. Buendia's gone, no, give me the ball. I'm just going to drive at you, or I'm going to pass through you. His instinct is always to go through, not around.
Yeah, and his first touch is always to set something up.
Yeah.
Whether he's, you know, to set something up going forward, whether he's prepping himself or he's, you know, flicking it onto somebody else.
I have thought about this a bit more, really. Is the Coutinho-Buendia thing, it's not as simple as one or the other, is it? And I think it's just the way that we're having to fashion our team at the moment. Is that's what I noticed in the first half, and I put it down to heat in one sense, is that we're a bit lethargic.
Keep saying that.
And, the searing heat and my...
We're trying to use this inbuilt excuse of heat just...
But the thing I was going to say,
David... We've got to remember that most of the Villa games are not played in heat, so that's why we've never used that as an excuse.
And I was about to caveat that by saying the thing that I felt that slowed down, and I still think Villa haven't clicked with Coutinho yet. Coutinho does, as I think Chris was just describing, he comes, he receives, and then he plays a ball off quickly. I noticed there were two or three times, and I think the interchange was with Kamara on a couple of occasions. He went to receive the ball back again, but we put our foot on the ball. We take two touches too often. And that's the Villa trait that I, you know, if it hadn't been Everton or it had been Man City, Liverpool, someone else, those central midfielders move the ball much quicker. And they hurt. I think that's where we could be hurt. And I think a player like Coutinho needs speed around him. And this is the challenge, I think, that we've got. If we can find some way to get Buendia around Coutinho, I think that you've got a very, very... We're just talking about being unable to read the pass. I think Coutinho is the player who can read the Emi Buendia pass.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's off the ball, isn't it? Because once you start filling up your team with, let's say...
Carlos Hills.
to break it down into just basic generalization, shorter players, then physically, you know, defending set pieces, it's more how it affects off the ball, defending set pieces, you're suddenly at this kind of disadvantage. So you've got to have that kind of blend and balance. So if you're bringing in, if you want to play both Coutinho and Buendia, then you've got to look for something in the middle there, which probably isn't a McGinn or a Louise.
It's not easy. And I'm speculating, and we haven't yet found that combination, have we?
There was a little combo, wasn't it? Right on the
stroke of half time. I think it was Coutinho, Ramsey. I can't remember who else was involved in it. There was a really tight, fast little interplay around the penalty area. We played through him and then flashed it across the penalty area. I think it was Kamara slid in. I might be wrong. It would have been a brilliant goal. That was the best bit of interplay probably in the whole game from Villa.
Because initially, really when in the first half, when they were kind of playing it out, and then they were waiting for either Ramsey or McGinn to make the run or receive the ball and then do something to actually trigger the attack, and it became a little bit predictable.
It was better when Ramsey carried the ball. Actually, there was a couple of times where he just went, "Fuck this! I'm just going to carry it," and drove.
And that was very the impressive. There were two or three drives, weren't there? That
turns on a sixpence. And once he gets past that first man, of course, with an Everton winning, when you've got like maybe a 9 or a 10 man press behind the ball, you have to engage the first man. Otherwise, you are literally just playing sidewards, or you're having to go around them.
That's why it's good. You know, if you've got Ramsey surging, you want Buendia around, you know, to have the layoff ball to then, you know, he flicks it off, you know, 1-2, as, you know, he played the 1-2 of Watkins.
Because someone like Ramsey, I mean, I think if you run at anyone, whatever level they're at, you're going to cause some problems. You know, that's the way you're going to hurt the top sides. I remember when we came back against United in that game in January, it was, wasn't it? And we did that by basically just thought, hang on, how the fuck are we 2-0 down to these chumps?
But that's the spontaneity part, isn't it?
Yeah, we just engage them.
Ramsey brings a spontaneity when he does stuff like that. Buendia is very unpredictable. I don't think anyone knows. I'm not sure he knows what he's going to do necessarily. But that's what unlocks teams. And Everton weren't the best defensive setup, and I don't think it really took much to ruffle their feathers. But against better teams, you have to be spontaneous, because I think if you were to study Villa, we are quite predictable.
We were, especially in the first half. I think Chris at half time, you said to me, this game's crying out for Bailey, but I think Buendia was obviously the man. I think Bailey works better when you've got a team coming at you, and Everton were just too far entrenched for Bailey really to have any open space
later on
to
in the game. I think it was the right change when they brought him on. Because I think, we saw against Everton last season, you give him open space to run into and he's going to cause you problems. Although what I would say, actually, because he was generally leans to playing on the right-hand side, the only way Everton were going to hurt us was either a Villa mistake from a set piece, or they targeted Matty Cash, didn't they? Especially in the second half, every ball was going into that right channel. They were just hitting it over his shoulder and chasing it. And that's obviously where their goal
was actually Carlos that was...
He got done, didn't he, on the...
Bit of a lame duck on that one.
Yeah, it's a poor goal. I mean, good work by their lad on the touchline, but it's a bit of a shit goal. Villa just switched off.
To be honest, I mean, Martinez made some smart saves, but that one where Mings got that challenge in when it rebounded back, they could have clawed a draw out of this.
Chambers made a very important tackle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we were looking at a 2-0 to 2-2 scenario, this podcast would be completely different.
Yeah. And with everything else that had gone on in the ground, be it, you know, trains and queues, everyone would have lost their shit if they'd have thrown the game away. Because frankly, Everton barely deserved a shot on target. They were average. I'm not going to say they were bad. They were just bang average. So when you let them back in the game, you think, well, we should be enjoying 5 minutes of stoppage time of just Olay football. This should be nothing here. This shouldn't be an exciting game from this point. Yet somehow Villa managed to turn the game into a spectacle when it didn't need to be.
Just to throw a contrary view in up there, it's Buendia and Bailey on, all great going forward, but when Coutinho and Ings off, Everton weren't getting as much joy with the two of them on. I thought Coutinho surprised me that he did a decent job defending for a change. Because I know he took a yellow card earlier on for one of those fouls that he had to make, but other than that, he did nick the ball out a couple of times. So I agree with Dan. There has to be a way to get the two of them into the team, because if it worked against Everton away last season, which was a tough game, and then the first 80 minutes or however many minutes against Man City in the last game of the season, when they and Coutinho were both in the pitch, and it worked then. So there has to be a way to make it.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's about balancing, just to make you a bit more physical in terms of when you're off the ball. But we shall see.
It's nice to have options.
That injury time, a lot more happened in that than in the rest of the game. And I mean, there was a moment where, I mean, the people next to me in the hut were going crazy with Matty Cash goes down injured. I don't know if it was cramp or whatever, but he's off the pitch for his treatment. It's like, just every opponent we ever have who's leading at Villa Park,
they roll back on.
We'll roll back on, stay on the pitch for their treatment just to break up the play and eat away on the clock, because you know the ref never adds on the right amount. And, you know, like, what the hell is Cash doing? You know, get on the, you know, roll back on the pitch. And then, and Gerrard went apeshit at him. He then was trying to get back on the pitch from behind the goal. And Everton were attacking. Instantly, he plays on any Everton player onside, and they can suddenly get into what would be offside positions. And Gerrard went, you know, because you
meant to come ballistic on the touchline, wasn't
he? Yeah, you meant to come round to come, you know, come back on around the halfway line. But also, like, football IQ, what are you doing? It's, yeah. I was joining
game
in.
Management in stoppage time for Villa was pretty pathetic, other than Emi Martinez and Ashley Young. Ashley Young obviously took a yellow for time wasting.
That's why he came on,
rolled the ball to Cutler, didn't he? He was stood in the corner. And Martinez took the catch, went down and feigned injury.
Yeah, but yeah, Matty Cash would have got a bollocking and an education into, you know, what you should do. That just showed you the panic that was involved there. And it's just like, you're at home. You should be taking the sting out of the game.
You should be cruising at this point.
The opposition, especially at the level of what we were playing, shouldn't even get a sniff of that ball.
It just felt normal Villa to me.
Yeah.
Would have been disappointed.
A top side at that point would, they'd get the second one, kill the game, or if Everton tried to have a go, you'd just kill them and get the third. Which, frankly, let's be honest, Watkins, if he'd have had a better first touch, probably would have.
Yeah.
There were some parallels there, and I think you're actually really right, David. I think if there had been a 2-2, I think there would have been some serious discontent, because it would have been quite a collapse against, I think,
a shit team.
I think they're a very poor Everton team, but I think it would have been the manner. And there were a couple of moments, and I forget, I think it was Gordon cut in and sort of fashioned a shot that Martinez manages to pluck out of the air. And then, of course, there was a couple of blocks. Any one of those goes in, I don't think we could have had any complaints, because, as you say, those 5 minutes were so chaotic. And you think, I don't see other teams doing, I mean, maybe, bar Man United, but I don't see other teams defending like we do. Like, we went to absolute pot, didn't we, for those 5 minutes?
Just looking at the coverage of Forest against West Ham, and you know, they saw that one out, and they've bought, I'm losing count now, is it up to 14? They got a couple of other players in the last 24 hours. Yeah, 14, 15, it's literally going up every day. And their next game is against Everton, and I would not be surprised if Forrest gets something from that.
Me neither.
No problem.
Me neither.
What I would say with Villa, though, although it was they tried their best to, you know, snatch a draw from the jaws of victory, I'd still think because they put their bodies on the line, they actually showed a little bit of character to say, actually, do you know what, we've got over the line there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, the main thing about this, you know, rough around the edges, not the greatest opposition, but the win is big, and
yeah, it's big.
Three points is we're still in the realms of this Villa team. Is like every 3 points is important, and it changes the whole narrative and the momentum. It's not like where you've got a team that you know that's pretty good, and you could lose the first couple of games and you just say, yeah, you know, it's the start of the season, you know, once they get in sync, they'll be all right. But we don't have that kind of thinking at the moment. So every 3 points is good, and it helps big time, because it gives those players confidence, and hopefully they will be better.
It's important not to delude yourself either, isn't it? That there's big, you know, there were new faces added in the summer, and, you know, I always look to other teams, really. And I suppose across Saturday and Sunday, it gave us an opportunity to look at how some of the other sides were playing. The weekend I watched Chelsea and Tottenham, and you look at how teams that are a step above where we are now play, and you see the tempo, and you see some of the interplay, and, you know, and you think, right, that you can see the bits where we're still to develop or to mature as a team, and that's going to be the important next stage for us.
Yeah, because Coutinho works if he's, you know, if he's playing fast, if he's not, like, you know, taking two touch, and then he plays, and the teammates around him, I don't want to point the finger at him solely, but, you know, if he plays it to a player, that player shouldn't be taking 2-3 touches and playing it sideways and playing it back. You know, you've got to be more like Buendia's mindset, where you're trying to make something happen as soon as you get the ball, and you're forward thinking. And, you know, we were that against Manchester City. We were creating chances by, you know, playing the margins. And we were just a bit too cautious. But also, I don't know if that's because of not being comfortable with the system or what. In terms of the Carlos injury, you'll probably know more about it by the time you listen to this podcast. At the moment, while we're recording it, we just know he's going for a scan. And Gerrard doesn't seem to be happy with the situation. So it looks pretty serious. Hopefully, touch wood, it's not.
I don't think we'll see him before Christmas. Those Achilles injuries can be really nasty, and the recovery is slow.
In the news article I put about it. I mean, people are jumping on, I think it was on the Sky put a clip out, I think it's from the post-match press conference, where he obviously he's been asked about the transfer window, and he said he does in the same sentence mention, you know, we have to look at Carlos's injury. I don't see Villa going out and paying 20 odd million for another centre back.
No,
I don't see that at all. When you factor in that Courtney House is coming back from injury, I think that's where what happens. He just slots in as the fourth, you know, because you need four centre backs.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the brakes would be put on any other moves. You know, if you were to say who might move out of the club, I think if you were to say who might move out of the club, if only on loan, you'd probably say House. But you've probably got, see, it does depend on the length of injury, doesn't it? But you can't go out and just buy another Diego Carlos either. That's the reality. Yeah.
So, and you've got to also remember that under Gerrard's management, Courtney House did get a new contract. So it's not as if he's dead wood to the situation. So I think that we will go with probably what we've got, unless there's an old top level old timer that's good for a season or two.
Graham Souness.
you can't just stockpile centre backs like that, because obviously we would have six then, including Courtney House. So I think they'd probably put the brakes on any move that he's making, and then have to decide out of Konsa or Chambers, really. And who would you go for? I'd probably go for Chambers at this point in time.
I think as a slightly better ball playing centre back, yeah, just in the spirit in terms of how we want to or how we appear to want to play.
And also because A, Cons is coming back from injury, but B, he did decline in terms of his performances last season big time.
I mean, if we get, you know, Konsa of lockdown, then brilliant. But
I don't
think they're much of a muchness, really. It's, you know, whoever you pick's got to come in and do the job. So, I mean, we did say, didn't we, maybe 2 weeks ago, that we didn't quite know some of the combinations, and it might be an injury or a suspension that forces your hand a little bit. Well, we've had it a bit more dramatic than we hoped or would have expected for, but Gerrard has had his hand forced a little bit.
But that, I think that's in a bad way. I think if, like, for example, if Coutinho gets injured for just a couple of weeks, then that positively brings in Buendia, gives him a real chance to shine, and that might, you know, be a positive effect of adversity. With the Carlos one, I think it's just a bummer. It's like certified bummer. It doesn't really open opportunity. We can't really sit here and go, oh, good. It'll give Konsa a chance to show him, you know, prove himself. It's like, well, no, we were looking for an upgrade there. And also, it was good to have a strong centre-back partnership, which I always thought him and Mings would be in terms of physical and strong. And there isn't much of that in the team. So it's good to have two chaps like that. As Souness would say, men's men.
What a visionary.
Let's end on a, what are we calling this, useful stat of the game? Phil Shaw, have you got anything?
Well, other than McGinn breaking his duck, winning his first game as captain, and Mings has won
first game ever as captain, and he's been captain a few times, hasn't he?
He has, and then, of course, the Mings and the team win percentage goes up again from last week's stat, but the stat that's been doing the rounds is Luca Dean scored an own goal for Villa versus Everton last year, and now he scored an own goal. He's just returned the favour, doing his best Matt Target impression.
Yeah, what is it with our left backs? He likes to score own goals.
It was very Target. It was very like Target against Spurs. It was just that one where he didn't expect it to come across the box, and he gets nudged, and then it just hits him in the heel and goes in.
We are cursed.
Why can't we have a left back like Steve Staunton who just rifle them in from all angles? That's in the opposition goal, not ours, obviously.
Right, any final remarks before we disappear?
I'm hot.
Yeah, we are still melting in our saunas, shedding our skins. I think this is the last hot day of the summer. I mean, they'll still be warm, but not like extreme. I
remind you of this when it's snowing at Bolton in a midweek.
Anyway, thank you very much for listening to the show, and I enjoyed that game because I changed seat and I have a new seat and it has a 100% winning record, so much improved on last season's seat.
Only five more wins needed to level last year's home record of wins.
And that would be classed as continuous improvement.
No, because I did miss three games last season at home, and we won them all. So I only saw three home wins last season.
Villa did take to locking you out as well at one point. Yes.
Yeah, just to try to improve the winning ratio. But yeah, so we're only two games away. Hopefully we get them done and dusted very, very quickly. Then I can feel happy for the rest of the season, knowing that it's been an improvement already. If you are listening to the show, please do give it a follow so you will have notifications of when it pops up. When I say follow on whatever podcast app you use. And also follow us on social media at myoldmansaid.com. And of course, there's a Mad Few Facebook group specifically for listeners of the show. So the links to all of this are in the show notes. Right. I'm going to try to find an ice bath somewhere and sleep in it for the night. Before we go, make sure you do a Diego Carlos some kind of witchcraft dance to make sure he's not injured for a long time and hopefully lessen his injury time out, because he doesn't normally get injured, does he?
Apparently it's 8 games he's missed in his entire career with injury.
The curse of...
That'll be about 8 months.
It's also a... Is it this Villa curse? Is it specific to Brazilians that we sign?
Belgians.
The Martin Larsen effect.
Well, no, Wesley, obviously.
Wesley, Luke Nillis.
Yeah, but he arrived with one leg shorter than the other. There was a clue.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Bailey last year signed in a shed.
Yeah, all these new signings, there should be a money back guarantee, I think, from now on in.
Like season tickets.
Mr. Purslow, yes. All right, until our games against those southern Londoners, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.